Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Monday evening, Edwin is back. Edwin, lovely to see you again. How are things?
Great, Martin. No, I'm great, but not as chilled as the current property market.
Yeah, it's a little bit on the cool side, isn't it? Slowly but surely, people are realizing that things are not quite what they were. And I do find it fascinating how, you know, slowly but surely, more and more people are beginning to write about the things that we've been talking about. For example, we'll talk a bit later. Catality actually highlighted the fact that maybe auctions isn't the way to actually put your property up on the market at the moment. And of course, the other day I made a show on gazundering, which is now a thing, evidently. In other words, people are actually downbidding on prices that they've already sort of verbally agreed. Interesting times.
They are interesting time, Martin, but we are with what's happening playing out here in Australia, you've got to give it to our cousins over in New Zealand, right? I mean, it's Christmas in July for New Zealanders. Look, Martin, the WeChat chatterers are talking about investing in New Zealand. And you and I know that when the WeChat chatterers are talking and putting stuff out on WeChat, on their social media platforms, you and I know that they've already moved. They've already eyed out the land and that's where they are. We've been following what the WeChat chatterers have been doing for over 4 or 5 years now, and they're always 6 to 12 months ahead of the curve. So, you know, it's Christmas in July for New Zealand. So if you're thinking of buying in New Zealand, you better buy it quick, because in 6, 12 months' time, are you going to be 5? Are you going to be 10? Are you going to be 15% apart from current prices? So this is, it's an interesting, it's what's unfolding is interesting. And on top of that, obviously you've got the Prime Minister was over not too long ago and basically saying, hey, no capital gains tax over here, lads. Come and set up your businesses, come and set up your, buy your investment properties, do whatever you want. We are open for business. So this is basically compounding on what you and I have been talking about for good 2-3 months already. And but as I say, when the WeChat chatterers speak, Martin, we better listen.
Yeah, this is very interesting, Edwin. And I would make the point that the other day I made a show on New Zealand property, and I called it "Stuck in Cautious Mode," because if you actually look at what's happening, there are a few pockets, particularly in the South Island, where prices are rising quite fast. But if you look elsewhere, actually things are quite different. So it's a matter of being discerning and selective. But I was really fascinated by the REINZ, which is effectively the real estate body. And they were really talking up the New Zealand property market, despite the fact that prices are still significantly down, somewhere between 17 and 25%, depending on where you look. The number of listings are continuing to rise. And apart from a few small markets on the South Island, prices are falling still further. Auckland is still going down at the moment. So, yeah, I suspect the WeChat chatters will be quite discerning as to where they buy and what they buy. But no CGT, quite attractive.
And this is where you can only see but a migration even from Aussies. Look, for the people that can't, they've got no commitments here in the sense, if there's nothing really anchoring them down to Sydney or even that the other side of the world of Australia or Victoria, if there's nothing anchoring them there, like you'd do the move, right? You'd really do the move, particularly if you're in that space where you can your business is carried on with your onboard luggage. In other words, your business sits on your laptop. All the innovators, all the innovations. I mean, we're going to be talking about a new innovation tomorrow, but and it's the way that we're thinking it's going to go. I'm asking myself and all those involved the question: should we migrate over to New Zealand and park it there?
Well, let's just briefly talk about tomorrow's show. So there's a show titled a property research game changer with Edwin. You're coming on and you're going to talk specifically about a new thing that you've got going there, which I think is very interesting and very appropriate given what's going on at the moment with regard to the property markets in Australia. It is actually, I think, worth highlighting just a few important trends here as we think about this. But tomorrow, people will ask you directly about what you're seeing, and join us at 8 p.m. Sydney time for a live with our property insider, Edwin.
Yeah, look, thanks for the plug, Martin. And it's really, you've got to ask yourself the question. What is the biggest bugbear that you've had over the years when you've been trying to buy a property, or what is the biggest current bugbear that you have when you're currently trying to buy a property? And we're going to make that. We're going to basically we want to shorten that gap between the selling agents and the buyers, or the vendors and the buyers. Call it a level playing field. Bring about a level playing field. There are many ways that this can be done, and we've been thinking about this for years. As I've been sharing with you over the years, my thoughts and what we've been sharing over the Monday evening property rants for the last 5-6 years, and basically, given the purchasers that opportunity to have greater information in front of them. The saying goes, every home has a story, Martin, but too often buyers only hear half of it, and that's usually from the selling agent and all the marketing paraphernalia that they hand out on glossy brochures. So we can get to the bottom. That's a whole gist of it. We're not trying to promote a new platform, but more so it's a new way of thinking and a new way of buying real estate, buying, selling, because at the end of the day, we want buyers, we want vendors, and we want selling agents to be involved with this platform.
Yeah, this is going to be a very important conversation tomorrow. But just as a way into it, let me just highlight that I made a show yesterday called Gazundering Is Back, Baby, as Home Prices Fall Further. And I actually talked about some people that I spoke with over the last week or so, where they've actually thought they'd agreed a price for a sale and then discovered that the prospective purchaser went and did a bit more research and came back. And in one case, it was a survey defect. And the other two, it was that the property portals were reporting price falls. And so they came back and negotiated a price fall. And of course, until the contract is actually inked, nothing much is to be done. It is a thing. And I'm finding this interesting because what it suggests to me is that there's a lot of nervousness out there. Also, a lot of people are trying to get a better handle on what's really going on. Interestingly, if you look on the portals, more and more properties now have no disclosure at all about what the price is, right? What the asking price is. So it really is very, very difficult for people to try and actually figure out what is really going on. And these sort of macro trends that we keep talking about with these indices, you know, talking about capital cities or a whole of Australia, they're meaningless. You need to go granular, as we always say. Now, the other thing I want to make a link to is I made a show the other day talking about the housing downturn. And the fact that maybe house price falls could be positive for Australia insofar that it might direct more bank lending towards the more productive sector, small business lending, for example, where, of course, they've pretty much gone away from that, throwing more money at more mortgage holders. So I think that could be a little angle. But, of course, the media has been pushing very hard, the biggest house price fallers since the budget. Well, they're talking specifically here about some of the areas in Sydney, like East Domain East and Drummoyne. Bayview and a few other places there with significant falls, and blaming the budget as well as other things. And then we had, of course, the report about the ongoing slump in auction clearance rates, now worse than during the pandemic, according to the AFR. But again, clearance rates don't tell you very much at all. And of course, we also got this little juicy bit here from Catality and Antipenian Macro showing that Perth is only holding up the positives, right? Everything else is negative. And Cameron Cushion made the point that he thinks that this is not going to turn around anytime soon. Unlike previously, there are too many gravity issues. Inflation remains high. You've got the ongoing war in Iran, and et cetera, et cetera. Rate cuts aren't coming. Interestingly, of course, where there are spruikers, and I want to highlight this, that property investors, evidently, according to, people who are actually trying to get new property investors to buy off the plan or new builds, are saying they're all going to the high-rise construction sector now, which I have my doubts about, because it was interesting that the statistics that they showed was actually predominantly percentage rather than actually a total number of sales. So I'm a bit skeptical of that. Oh, and by the way, also the mortgage demand is considerably down, which I think is irrelevant. And the final point, just to say that there was a very interesting article highlighting the fact that high house prices now don't seem to be winning votes, because the latest BlackRock survey showed more people are actually voting for potentially falls in prices rather than rises. And it's a fascinating change comparing what Howard used to say about nobody gets angry with house prices going up, but now it's perhaps different. And it's interesting just how broadly it is that people are saying, no, we need a different path. So it is absolutely time to think differently about property and how to actually decide where to buy and what to buy and what information sources you use to make those decisions. And going back to the gazundering issue, actually, of course, quite often the decisions are poorly informed, which is why gazundering happens quite often.
100%. Now, one of the things that people have got to be extra careful on moving forward now is valuations. The banks are on edge, and no doubt they have instructed valuers to to value a lot tighter and to take the emotion that that 5% emotion that they would gift purchases when they when the market goes gangbusters. That's pretty much gone now, because of people say, try to contradict what I say, or have an issue with what I say with regards to banks instructing values. You've got to understand who pays the valuer, right? That's the first. Who pays the valuer? You don't pay the valuer. The banks pay the valuers. And how much time did I have to get a report? When I started in real estate almost 30 years ago, valuations were around the $600, $700 that values were getting from the banks. Now it's, they'd be lucky to get $150 per valuation. And that's doing the valuation. If it's a site valuation, they have to drive to the premises, inspect the premises, take photographs, and then do a report later on. Now there's a lot of desktop valuations, but now we're going to get into an area where values are going to have to be visiting property, especially if the people, the buyers that are seeking for higher loan amounts, they're going to argue, or the mortgage brokers are going to argue on their behalf as to why should value up, typically because of inclusions, recent renovations, and the like. So. And that is where you end up with these that term that you used, where then you go back and you negotiate down. It's for us, for myself and my team, that strategy of signing a contract to locking the buyer in to a 7-day, 10-day cooling off, or 5-day cooling off, 7-day typically is what is requested now, and then sometimes it morphs into a 10-day cooling off. That is a strategy to use by the buyers. Even when the market is going up, I've used that strategy myself over and over again to buy properties for our clients, and then on the 11th hour, you try and pull the pin. You try and scare the bejeebies out of the agent and out of the vendor, because then that means that the properties come off the market over a 10-day period. That's a 10 working day period. So you say the equivalent of 2 weeks. And then when it goes back on the market, you may not get the same value, or people are going to start asking the question, well, what's wrong with this property? Why is it now back on the market? Now, so that is that strategy I've used when the market is going gangbusters and going north. But when the market is going south, it really tips things on its head, and you can get away with blue murder, as they say. So, and because vendors are on abiding the fingernails, so that's what. But Yeah, like apart from everything else, every other strategy. I remember in late 2021, when the market was in a similar situation that we are now before it really took off, where the actual listings on market were still relatively high. That we had the lockdowns, and I was in Tarawera at the time, and negotiating on a property for a client. And there were three bidders. I was bidding on behalf of my client at the time, and I threw in a very low bid. I noticed that there were only two other bidders that were sort of edgy. Dusty was doing the rounds. They were Cantonese. So got sort of insider information as to what they were thinking, they were saying. So I got the nod, and I went in. I threw in a low bid, and obviously the auctioneer, said, "Hey, look, Edwin, come on, started, with your spiel, it's a great home, it's this and that, basically, how dare you, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to engage with the auctioneer. I wanted him to I wanted to have a conversation. I wanted to put everyone on it. And then as soon as he finished his little spiel and raving on about the property, I said, "Look, mate, I said, look, my client's got another 200,000 in him. If you eliminate the highway noise, behind that great big concrete wall. So if you can eliminate that, I'll give you, my client's prepared to give you 200." So we negotiated the deal on the day because the other two parties just walked away. Just didn't want to bid because people get emotional. And did they know that there was a highway behind that great big wall behind them? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't pay attention to it until we were there on the day, on a Saturday. And that I said, so I wasn't telling a Furby, I was just telling the sheer truth, right? And said, look, eliminate that. Come up with a solution, and I'll give your vendor an extra. I've got clearance to give you an extra 200,000. So from my low bid to the extra 20, we agreed and we settled with an extra 50, and we cut the deal. That's in these markets. But when the markets are going gangbusters, at times you don't even have you the purchaser's expectations are just. You're left behind in the dirt because everybody's just so emotional. You just don't have time. But things have changed. Here we are. It's lockdowns 2.1, and it's only, in my opinion, it's really only a matter of time before before listings start tracking down. But some say it's going to be 6 months. Some say it's going to be 12 months before the dust settles. We don't have a crystal ball. We can only speak about the facts that are, things that are playing out at the moment. But one thing for sure, Martin, and we are going on to one of the points and one of the clips that you put up on the screen, and with regards to people, Labor could come in, or along the lines of Labor are sort of winning the votes at the moment because people are going to vote on lower prices. Well, I can tell you should go out and vote for One Nation because that redhead's going to crash the market in 2028. That's my prediction. I'm sticking to it because. You cut immigration and that's it. It's as one analyst said, Dusty mentioned to me today that when she was reading one of her WeChat posts, an analyst there said, look, if the right now we're going through a slow death with the economic policies that the government's bought in, and it's a slow death. But if you cut immigration the way that potentially the Liberals and the way that One Nation wants to cut it, it's not going to be a slow death. It'll be a heart attack. So then I turned around to Dusty and I said, "Listen, Dusty, you can't fix things until they're broken, and putting Band-Aid solutions along the way, it's not going to cut it. So wait, well, let's just wait and see. Let's just wait and see."
That's interesting. The latest poll put Labour ahead again now. So, there's a bit of ups and downs. But on the data, there's just a couple of catalogue slides which are quite relevant. So the listings numbers are significantly higher, 15.9% up above the combined capitals compared to 12 months ago, which is quite interesting. And you can see there that the total listings we're talking about, the new listings not so much, only about 2%. I think that's quite relevant. There's a lot of stuff hanging around on the market. And the other one, again, from Cotality, just showed that the sales volume, this is the six-month moving average nationally, is now significantly below the five-year average. So you've got the very interesting situation where you've got the push-me-pull-you with more listings and lower volumes. But I think you make a really interesting point. At what stage is this going to change? At what stage will people simply say, no, I'm not playing that game anymore? And will we start to see listings evaporate? If we do, that will be a bit of a game changer. Not seeing it at the moment, but there is a bit of an air of desperation, I think. And I do expect to see a little bit of more of that. As we come to the spring season, I think we'll have to wait and see. There is still an expectation of more rate rises from many people. Some people saying one, some people saying two rate rises. The fallout from the CGT changes are still sort of bubbling through and nobody's quite sure where they're going to go. But I do think the cost of living questions, I do think the oil price questions are also there in the background. But I suppose it comes back to, what do you think about the country? And you may have heard the term, as you say, burn, baby, burn. But maybe there's another one.
Yeah, the new term is that the politicians are trying to coin now is, burn country, burn, or burn Australia, burn. I mean, seriously, do they have rocks in their heads? You and I know, and we, and many of our followers, most of our followers know, the majority know that a lot of small businesses are tied up with the equity of the homes, are cross collateralized with the homes. And this is the problem that we have right now, Martin. As much as you want to make it more affordable for the young people, for the new the newcomers into the market, the families or single folk that want to jump on the ladder, you want to make it more attractive, more affordable. But I don't necessarily believe it's crushing the property prices that's going to do the trick, because that's really going to be a major dagger into the heart of the economy. And now on top of that, they want to bring in 4-day working week. And it's going to absolutely shatter the economy. But my question to that is: Are we even going to have the SMEs surviving 2026, 2027 to even have a job? Once it's crushed. Look. You and I, and when we started sharing almost 10 years ago, when we started talking about the whole fiasco, and back then I was sharing with you that the issue with building new, with the new construction and new development, is we got too heavy-handed with the high-rise development and the stamp duty is like crack to a junkie. Stamp duty is the same to the politicians, and we started flogging off these badly built high-rise developments, and then on top of that, we just started the taxes just started rising. I mean, Holroyd Council, one of the developers that I was working with back in the early 2000s, I mean, the council contributions to build back then was something like $2,500-$3,000. Now try to get through Parramatta Council or Holroyd Council with a council contribution less than $85,000 per unit. I mean, they're getting a hell of a lot more by way of council contributions than obviously putting a lot more dwellings on a lot less land, right? So this is what really turned our whole infrastructure, really shot it to pieces. And then the state government wasn't going to sort of hold back. Then they started getting the noses in the trough, and then obviously there's the federal government with the GST, and this is what a lot of people don't understand, that the GST that a lot of these small developers of one project developers put in, like they may all. Companies that are SPVs, special purpose vehicles that are set up to develop. Yeah, there's a CGT. There's a GST component at the end of the sale. And guess who really wears that is the purchaser. So when you start taking out all the taxes and all the duties and all the levies and everything else, we could build for a lot cheaper, even with the current manpower cost of manpower. We could build a hell of a lot cheaper, and we should be concentrating, as I've been saying since 2008, 2000, and between 8 and 12, I was very vocal about it, and that was that we should be building the small development, the small to medium strata complexes, such as your townhouse developments or your duplexes, triplexes, and the like. But red tape just got the better of it. But now here we are. So going back to that post, so not only are we going to crush the economy with the economy or the SMEs by diluting the equity that's been cross collateralized with the business loans, but now we want to crush it a different way as well. I mean, I had a quick chat with Louis Christopher, which was interesting. We're comparing notes as to what he sees with his data and what I'm seeing with our conversations with the liquidators, some big firms, and what we've been discussing with them as to moving forward, what's going to happen. It's absolutely scary, Martin. Absolutely scary.
Absolutely. And, chat with Louis highlights the fact that there are some distressed sales. A lot of those distressed sales are actually specifically associated with small businesses. In my small business surveys, I see more and more small businesses now less confident of their ability to survive over the next 12 months or so. And of course, quite a few of them have, they've had to mortgage their main residence to be able to support their business. So there's a knock-on effect here, which people don't understand. And like I said earlier on, one of the really interesting observations with the productivity problem that Australia has is that the banks have lent more and more and more for mortgages for people to buy investment properties and owner-occupied properties, and have lent less and less and less to small business. So it is harder for small businesses to get support, which of course could be productive parts of the economy if they were allowed to thrive and more than survive. But unfortunately, and again, you can see a bit of a spin going here. Jim Chalmers were talking about, we've created lots of new small businesses. No, you forget about the ones that have fallen off the back of the lorry, right? We are seeing a lot of people struggling, in some cases, leaving corporate jobs, trying to create their own business. In other cases, seeing in the construction sector, a lot of people just can't survive. So we are seeing a lot of small businesses falling over. That's putting huge pressure on the economy. And look, it is the small businesses in the economy that ultimately can become bigger businesses if they're allowed to grow. So that's where economic growth and productivity improvements can come from. But no, we can't possibly do that. We've got to put more barriers in the way. We've got to put more red tape in the way. We've got to make it more and more difficult for businesses to get by. And then, of course, the banks put more hurdles in as well and say, I'm only going to lend you if you give me a charge over your property and all those things. So this is a massive, massive problem. It's not being reported appropriately in the mainstream media, in my view. And this is another of those economic drivers we have to get right if we want to improve the productivity. But of course, what happens is you end up with a half-hearted approach or a bit of spin going on. And I'll give you another example of spin. Let's freeze rents. That'll solve the problem, right? That's the latest. That's the latest idea now from the Greens. I think the Greens are now proposing that we should have rent controls to freeze soaring costs. Now, I've always had the view that rent controls doesn't fix anything. All it does is to put another sticking plaster on a problem, but it doesn't solve the problem. Look at Canberra, it hasn't solved the problem there. But here we go again, more half-hearted, stupid interventions to try and do something that isn't going to solve the problem.
I mean, it's a problem that you got to ask the question that who created? Now, I'm going to ask you, Martin, who created this problem in the first place? And I'm not pointing the finger at the current government, because this also goes back to the previous government as well.
Yeah.
Right. That's the first question: is who created this crisis in the first instance? Because it didn't just happen from yesterday to today. And secondly, who hasn't been building, right? What was the trade-off? What was the trade-off? The trade-off was, okay, we're not going to build because we're not real estate agents and we're not builders. We're going to let the private sector build, and they're going to lease properties out, and then we're going to give you a covenant over the CGT, and also going to give you some negative gearing too, because we're not real estate agents, and we are not in the business of building. But all these promises from the current government and everything, but nothing's been built, right? But this is the clincher, Martin, that I'm going to ask you now is, who can reduce the current red tape and costs?
Well, a lot of it's at state level, right? A lot of it is at the state level. And you highlighted, and I keep highlighting it too, that the costs that are required now to get anything to build, it's gone through the roof. You know, that's just all the taxes, all the hurdles. So they could do something there. In terms of the question, why are we where we are? It's 40 years in the making, right? And everybody has a problem because of what has been created over 40 years. The government has actually been pulling the wrong levers, not least, of course, migration, but also deregulation of the financial system to the point where the banks were able to lend multiple multiples. So we have a debt-to-income ratio that's a lot higher now. Some people are actually 6 to 12 times income to buy a property, which is absolutely ridiculous. We had the changes to the tax regime to stimulate. Well, it was meant to stimulate share investments, but actually it stimulated property investment, right? So we had a massive stoke of the property investment sector, despite the fact that we learned in 2017-18 that actually if you turn the dial down, it will pull prices down. We saw that for a period, and then of course they reversed. So we've got a deregulation of the financial system. We've got the intervention. We've also got the intervention again, from first home buyers being thrown money to try and encourage them to pull them forward to try and get them into the market. So rather than solving the fundamental question, what they've done is to try and actually just pull more people in, make them more in debt. If you look at the amount of debt that a typical new borrower has today, it's through the roof. And so that's why we've seen prices significantly higher relative to income growth over a long period of time. Again, bad policies. And then when things were going bad, rather than actually try and address the critical issue, they simply tried to sort of reinforce because they didn't want prices to fall. Remember the last election campaign? We think there's still sustainable price growth. There's no such thing as sustainable price growth in the current environment, which is, of course, why we need to see prices coming back down a bit. It's got to come back. But the point is, there are levers at the federal and the state and the regulatory environment that could be pulled to significantly change trajectory. But the question is, will they? Or will they simply say, oh, nothing to do with us? No, we recognize house prices might fall a bit, but that's not really the issue. There are things that could be done, but no, we aren't going to do that. We're going to actually continue with our committees and continue with our more hurdles. And by the way, they're bribing the states, of course, at the moment to build more stuff. They give them money to build more stuff. But the count is when the approval is made rather than when the thing is delivered. Well, what I would do is change the point at which money changes hands, right? When the property is occupied rather than when it's approved, that would change the game quite nicely too. So there are things that could be done.
And the unfortunate thing, Martin, is that the poor bastards that are living on the street, they're the ones that are suffering the most. They don't have a voice. They're not on social media. They're not on TikTok, like the politicians of late, have been promoting themselves as TikTok influencers. They don't have a voice. They don't. They'd be lucky if they carry any form of smart device, if anything. And this is the dilemma that we're in. This is these are the untold stories that it would appear that only yourself, and myself on the Monday Evening Property Rants that we've been continuing raising this, and we've been I've been an advocate for the rental side of the industry for decades, because that's where I did my my initial tenure with, you know, in the real estate arena was with, you know, in property management. And I saw a lot, learned a lot. And it was broken. It continues to be broken. And we'll continue to have those voices that just basically aren't as loud as your latte, happy, clappy, in the western suburbs, people that make the most noise. Whereas these poor folk just get, single parents, or the elderly, the frail. And as I keep on saying over and over again, it is getting very expensive to grow old in this country, and it's shameful, considering the fact that illustrious leader gets close to $700,000 a year, and there's been political figures, something that just got a pay rise recently over the last week or so, and then you, as you said, then you they appoint committees, and they appoint groups or what do they call them, those that walk around them, with their briefcases, advisors that don't even know about what goes on in the committee or the representative that they're advising to, that they've never worked a day in their lives in a physical job in that area, in that field, and yet they're the ones that are advising. But yeah, they're sitting on a motto. So it's broken. It is broken. This is why I said to Dusty earlier today. I said, hey, maybe it is. It is time that the whole system just broke all together, because that is the only way that we're going to fix it. And we're going to fix it. I was saying 2-3 years ago, I was saying the only way to fix this is going to be by a revolution. And maybe that's what we're headed for.
Well, it certainly isn't working. And this homelessness story, this article, the wait for unbuilt social housing felt as Sydney's homeless still out on the street. This is the Reverend Bill Cruz. He's never seen Sydney homelessness worse. And, you know, when I was living in Thirroul, there were people in Thirroul on the street, camping out. And of course, the tent cities are still there. Now, just on that, it's worth just connecting that with the upcoming census, right? I put out a question on X the other day, a question about the upcoming census. 11th of August will be the Australian census night. But what about those living informally in tents and caravans and cars and worse? Will they be included? The ABS says that they're going to write to most households, but what about those without a formal address? Given the number of people homeless is rising, will this distort the results? I haven't seen anything from the census people as to what they're going to do with regard to making sure that those who don't have formal accommodation are actually captured in the census. And that, for me, is a really, really important question, Edwin, in terms of how we actually get a good handle on what is really going on. Because frankly, your point about those people, they're silent, they're not on social media, no one's really taking them seriously. And there are very few people talking about this critical issue. You know, the tent cities are still around, people are still struggling, people living in cars, people camping on floors, maybe, if they're fortunate. This is a massive failure. So yeah, can you solve it without blowing the whole system up? Well, I sometimes wonder whether, in fact, we need something a bit more robust to be able to move the dials. Because it's clear to me that the policies and politicians, they're not interested in really solving the fundamental structural issues we've got here. What they're doing is trying to sort of do a little bit, show a bit of lip service, do the announceables, as I often say, and really it's not enough to solve the real problem. And that's very, very concerning, particularly now. It's going to get worse, I think, as well. So, yeah, we need to shake it up. Another interesting angle on this, you know, it's not just the homeless that have an issue, but if you look at some of the property developers and some of the shenanigans going on there, then there's another angle here as well. And there's been quite a lot of coverage recently about the Bathler Group, and whether you saw that. They're now talking about, what's going on here? This is the biggest borrowers in private credit with $3.1 billion in debt. And the question is, well, who's running it? And is it going to fall over? And if it does, what about the thousands and thousands of half-built properties that are actually still going on at the moment? So the other issue in terms of the property sector is this issue of construction not working well, the funding not working well, half-built properties, it's taking a lot longer to complete as well. So again, it's broken. However you look at it, it's broken.
I knew Bart from when he was still driving a cab, and he had his office in Pendle Hill, and that's when I first met him. Very, very intelligent, but very smart. I mean, the guy, I don't know whether he still does, but he back then he had a photographic memory. He could memorize building plans, but that's when I met him when he was building in. The time he was building Mount Druitt, townhouses around Mount Druitt, Rudy Hill, those areas. And I was involved with a real estate office in Parramatta, and we would be selling, you know, we'd be selling them off the plan. Back then, when I first, when we were going through his bills, it was, I mean, they were shocking. They're really like, they were only built for a 15, 20-year tenure. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those developments are on the ground. Recall one of the things that really caught my attention was the size of the buildings that he started building, and then we had to make him aware of the fact that the way that you place your coat hanger inside the building so the clothes can, well, he was of the opinion that that people have more room, or whether he wanted, don't know whether he was of the opinion of it was more practical or whether he wanted to skimp on materials, but he would say that he was of the opinion that people would get more in there if you hung the clothes horizontally rather than vertical to the adjacent to the sliding doors, to the point, Martin, where when the buildings were finished, the rails for the coats and the shirts and that, if you put a shirt in there, a third of the shirt would stick out, and you wouldn't be able to close the sliding door. He would say, "Oh, look, you just have to tell them to turn that around and do it the other way, or get a new rack."
It looks better if you've got more room rather than actually storage. It's very interesting when you look at some of those things that have been built over the years. The lack of storage, the lack of quality. This is not just this particular area, this particular player here. More broadly across the construction sector, it's pretty bad. And one of the things I often say to people is, if you're looking at the newer stuff, ask some hard questions about, well, what's the quality, and open the doors, see what's inside the cupboards.
The scary thing with about 15 or 15, a bit more, maybe 18 years ago, when I was made aware that. He started moving into the apartment space, and I thought, I'm not even parking my car in any of his buildings. I was still involved with property management and sales there in the office in Parramatta. It was very, very questionable. But I don't know, Mark, like, he's stuck around. Right, he's one of the guys that's stuck around. There are many that have flown the coop and that are now living abroad. Yeah. And they're trying to we're trying to extradite them back into the country, and they're facing charges. I mean, we've got the Dildom Group, we've got the Qatars, we got as I call it, Tip Top Constructions or Top Place Constructions, because the buildings were built like a loaf of bread. That's why I call it. They were top place construction. I call it Tip Top Construction. these are people that already flew the coop, but he's stuck around. It's really, really questionable, right? But there's a lot more. There's a lot more below the surface than what you read in the Australian or the any other publication. Likewise with the story about the current the agent that's just been sentence, if you want to call it sentence, to basically just I think it's 100 hours community service that she got. diddled with the sales trust account, which we're going to see a lot more of that. I feel moving forward, because as sales creep down or become less and less with offices, the tendency is for those the licensees in charge or the owners of the operations to diddle with the trust account, because it's the only password that they've got control of anyway. That's between them and the millions of dollars that could be sitting in the trust account from the rent roll and from the deposits of properties. But and there's a lot more to this story as well. I actually know a lot more of the background to this agent that just got convicted. I know, as I said, more of the background. I knew that she got herself into trouble almost 2 years ago, and this is how long this thing goes through the tribunal, through NCAT and Fair Trading. It takes a long time from when they get found out to when they get convicted or charged. But in between then, they're still practicing, and there's still more shenanigans as per this particular story. But then you go back to in both stories as to who's really in charge, Martin, and who's really in control. You've got the peak body, the so-called peak body, in the case of the agent, Tim, the CEO of the REI New South Wales, wanting to evict, as he calls it. He wants to evict the Minister for Fair Trading for Innovation. He wants to evict because he feels that he's not doing his job. And the way that he puts it, that he's not doing his job, he puts it that he's not doing his job because he's not conversing with the so-called peak real estate body, being the REI. But my question is, if you've got the one of the peak members or the president of the REIA, gunning. That got convicted for him and his wife got convicted for trust account fraud many years ago. And he was not only the president of the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales, but he was also the president of the Real Estate Institute of Australia. So it's a case of, do as I say, not as I do. Or is it a case of the fish rots from the head? So when you've got this. Fraudulent is a fraudulent activity, or is it permissive to the point then there's no turning back? But when you've got high profile individuals, both in the financial sector and also in the real estate sector, committing the same offence and getting away with it and getting a slap on the wrist, I mean the story, the movie, goes on and on and on, because there's no real accountability in my view.
Well, actually, Edwin, one of the things that I learned about Australia quite quickly was the sin is not committing the crime, whatever that is. The sin is being found out, right? And in Australia, it has amazed me the more I learned about the way that the economy worked and the way that power worked, was that there were a lot of people on the take, a lot of people, skating close to the wind, but actually it was getting found out that was the thing that to me is still going on. Now, on the found out question, I want to bring this up now, because of course the Victorian state budget has a debt of $215 billion, despite its economy being about 25% smaller than New South Wales. This is according to the Fin Review. And Victoria is going to be spending $1 in $10 on interest by 2030, according to Moody's. Of course, there's the election later in the year. Now, we've been talking about the collapse of Victoria for some time, right? And I think there's another angle which is worth just connecting to. There are a lot of people in Victoria who might be considering Brisbane. Why? Because you've got this 2032 worker deadline, move to source migrant workers or interstate workers to be able to actually support the 2032 games. Is this another reason to suggest that Victoria is going to continue to fade away? What do you think?
100%. This is like I predicted. My prediction in the first prediction, I think, was from 1st of January 2026, and that is the Great Victorian Exodus. And it keeps on going, and it will continue to roll on. Why not? Why not, Martin? If you've got a small building company, if you've got a small trade business, if you can basically, there's nothing going to be holding you back, other than you know, the grifters and all the taxes that you're going to be paying. If you've got a love affair with the politicians that, you know, if you like to hand out your money, you're going to stay there in Victoria, right? But I'd say that the great exodus will continue. And this is why then obviously we're going to have that bit of a rebound in the Brisbane property that's sort of become a little bit, you know, sort of wavering a little bit, because the supply and demand, right? You know, it's just the economies of scale. And so, the point that Tyler, in the, you know, makes in this in this LinkedIn post is the fact that we're going to have, basically, it is going to be a state campaign, right? So the Queensland state is going to basically, you know, blow the horn and start campaigning for. So, of course, we're going to lose some Sydneysiders as well, some New South Welsh people, you know, over the border. But I dare say that many from you know, from Victoria, and hence why I say the great Victorian exodus and keeps on rolling.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that if you look at the latest statistics over the last 12 months, Melbourne is the one state where prices are lower over 12 months compared with all the other states. That tells you something quite important. I mean, the Melbourne's property story has gone on for quite some time and continuing to go down. And I'm fascinated by how the fact that a lot of commentators are saying, oh, Melbourne's cheap, you should be buying in Melbourne, but actually people are still running away.
Thanks.
Interestingly, Brisbane price is now beginning to come back as well. So it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. But I do think the issues with regards to Melbourne and the Melbourne economy are deep and long-standing, and I'm afraid that the property trends that we're seeing is just an indicator of something much, much more seriously wrong in that area. Well, let's move on just briefly to look at the numbers, because of course the numbers are actually a way of trying to get a read as to where we actually are. And to do that, we'll start with Sydney and the domain definition of Sydney region. On the 13th, 25,176 properties listed in the Sydney region. Go forward a week, 25,281. And you can look at that in terms of your trending, which shows that listings are still up from where they were relative to last year, but coming back just a little as we head into the depths of winter and look forward to spring.
Take note, about 300 new listings have come up on the market in Sydney, but the majority of those have been from land subdivisions. That's the interesting thing. Is this the after effect of, you know, that investors could only buy new, and therefore the land holders, you know, the land bankers that are now they think they're going to get start moving some of their stock, because the actual land figures, I mean, we're almost double the amount of land parcels of land for sale in Sydney than in Melbourne. And last year it was the other way around. We were half of what Melbourne was, and now we've, you know, we've doubled. But yet, Melbourne, as you said, the listings have climbed in terms of, and which we'll see the numbers in terms of the freestanding homes. It is really an interesting, interesting dynamics that's playing out at the moment.
Yeah, let's look at Melbourne. So on the 13th, 35,494 properties listed for sale, of which houses were 24,987. Massive number of houses, right? Go forward to 35,538 with 24,143 houses. So yeah, there is something very different going on between Sydney and Melbourne at the moment. And as you say, the land parcels going down in Melbourne, but actually going up in Sydney, which is fascinating. What about Brisbane? Just briefly, on the 13th, 4,647 properties. A week later, 4,733 properties. So there's a little bit of a trend there. And we look at the auction story. Well, you can see here that auctions are pretty benign at the moment, pretty weak. The total numbers were quite a long way down again. The clearances were pretty weak. This week it could be a similar or might be slightly better, but this was interesting. This is what Cataldi said. The latest data shows the national share of auctions to new listings dropped sharply from its recent peak, and the cooling of sales volumes since 2025 reflects the cumulative impact of interest rate rises, cost of living, uncertainty, and policy changes negatively impacting property demand. As clearance rates fall and auction withdrawals rise, vendors are shifting their preferences towards private treaties rather than risking a public campaign that fails to sell. Edwin, they finally got to the point that we've been making for the last year plus.
100%. This is what we said, that auctioneers better start looking for a job. Apart from all the other points that we raised about why you would take a property to auction, why not, is what one of the, you know, in a market that you want to get out quickly, obviously, is you want to lock in a buyer, especially now when you don't want to basically start going down in price post the exchange of contract, because an exchange of contract on a private treaty campaign is you're only, you know, footing 0.25% of the deposit. So it's not, you're not losing your 5%, you're not losing your 10%. It's only a quarter of a percent of the value of the property. So let's say on a $2 million property, it's, let's round it off to about $5,000. So you can walk away from that, should you not, should the valuation not come in, or for any other for any other reason. So, but if you throw your hand up in the air and you win, you're the final bid, and the hammer drops on your bid, well then you're committed with a full 10%. So it's a big big difference, $200,000 to $5,000. Yeah. So if you want to really lock somebody, lock a prospective buyer in, well, there's obviously a lot of other things, but that's just one of the strategies that you adopt if you're wanting to get out quickly, or also due to various various reasons, urgencies, legals, medical, whatever. That's the only other reason why you'd go down the route. But in the most, this is what we've been saying, that sooner than later, the people aren't gonna be able to sell those books on auctions anymore, and the mainstream are going to have to start changing their narrative, or they're going to have to continue to watch our show.
Well, yes, they should watch our shows, because they can take those stories and then write them a few weeks later and still appear to be ahead of the curve, because of course we're ahead. And just on the auction listing comparisons, you can see that it's pretty low again, and it may pick up a little as we go into the autumn, but I'm a little bit sceptical as to whether auctions really are making a lot of sense for many people at the moment. Just quickly, let's look at the rentals. So in Sydney, on the 13th, 12,555. A week later, 12,611, so a small rise. And in Melbourne, 11,348 on the 13th, and 11,278 on the 20th, so a small drop there. I think that may well be because more of the investment properties are being put up for market to try and get sold at any price. So maybe that's why the rental story in Melbourne is still looking pretty sick at the moment. And I think we're going to see more of it ahead, Edwin. I think this is going to play out, and it's not going to play out well. I had more stories this week of people in existing rental properties being asked to accept another rent rise. And interestingly, one of the excuses now being used are the government's changes to CGT. So it's percolating through into the real world of rentals. And that's another reason why we expect to see the rents still going higher in a high cost, high inflation environment. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, just time for your final thought of the week.
The thought of the week is time to start shedding the old and moving to the new you, whatever it is, right? There are things that I've started looking around that I've been carrying for decades, which is scary. You know, and start shedding, like If you want to get new clothes, well, then shed the old ones that they haven't worn. So, or there's a lot of stuff that's hanging around, whether it be physical, whether it be emotional, mental, whatever. Like they're just things. I just get this feeling we got to start moving into, just shedding the old and moving into the new. That's what I've been thinking about all week, and. I'm working on some parts of my character as well, and looking at all the aspects of my life, and I think that's especially if we're going to have to the way that we're going to have to be dealing with the future that's before us, we're going to have to become more resilient. We're going to have to become tougher. We're going to have to become more tenacious and more focused and centered in what we're in who and what we are. Because at the end of the day, we can't change the bastards that are leading us into the catastrophe that we're walking into. We can't change it. We can only talk about it, and we may be able to put some shit on X or on whatever other platform, and shit on whatever politician you want to shit on. But at the end of the day, we can only control what's immediately around us. And I think the best thing is to shed the old and start looking for the new. And it could be for some of our viewers and our followers could be shed the old and look for a new job. I don't know. It's just something that I just wanted to put out tonight.
Yeah, I think it's very important. And I often say, Edwin, that you can't think about the past, absolutely. It's, you're locked in. But the future is genuinely open. There are still decisions that you might take that might actually change a trajectory, change a direction, change a relationship, change a job, whatever it is, right? So don't get so locked in to thinking that the future is going to be precisely the same as the past. It doesn't have to be, but you have to think differently about it. And you have to ask yourself some hard questions about what's really important and, make some of those step changes to change trajectory and change direction. And by the way, don't just wait for the government to sort of magically fix housing affordability or you'll still be hanging around in 20 years' time. Nothing much will have changed. So there we are. Well, we come to the end of the show. Just to remind everybody that tomorrow, Edwin, you'll be back, a property research game changer. And I look forward to that live show, and people can ask you questions directly on that. So make a note in your diary, 8 p.m. Sydney, Tuesday night. Look forward to that. And everyone, we'll see you back here, the normal rant for next Monday as well. So we'll see you then.
Forward to it, Martin. All the very best there.
Cheers. Take care.